Good afternoon and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM from Viroqua, Wisconsin, the community radio station of the Driftless area. And you can also listen to former broadcasts, podcasts, by going to our archives at WDRT.org. And you can listen live on the computer if you're further away than about 25 or 30 miles from Viroqua. You won't get a radio signal, but you can go on and listen to our program live. And I have friends who listen all over the United States who like to come on at noon on Saturday and listen to Who's in the Kitchen. So I've been doing this show for 11 years. Jim is in the studio with me on the board. Welcome, Jim. And he's been here, well, even before the station started broadcasting. So today, my guest is Randall Olson, and we're going to talk about garlic, and it's really the right time. We're right in the third week of July. And welcome, Randall.
Howdy.
Yes.
Yes, this is the time of the year when the garlic runs everything.
Timing is everything, and it's really, we're going to learn a lot about garlic and the varieties, and also how to plant it, how to grow it, how to store it, mistakes people might make, and so anything garlic. And you probably recognize Randall's voice because he's at the farmer's market and he's been there for years selling his garlic, educating people about garlic. And so I'm so glad to be talking to you today, Randall. It's great. And I was just asking you before we started, if you're from Viroqua, and you said you're a native of Viroqua, and it's actually getting rarer and rarer to find people who've really lived here all their lives and who were born here. So, and you said yes, and you've seen the changes. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit, because I got here 52 years ago, and I've seen changes.
Right.
Yeah.
I grew up in a little place called Purdy. Down in the valley west of the city. And so from that perspective, I didn't know a whole lot what's going on in the city until I come back some years later, and I saw quite a change from a very Republican county to quite the Democratic county now. And it's due to new people are moving in. Mm-hmm. Changes just naturally occurred due to human activity. And it's kind of interesting to see that.
Well, it's a lively town. And when you look around, a lot of little towns around here are pretty sleepy towns.
This town has avoided the sleepiness factor just by the fact that such a diversity of new people have moved in, and including a person like myself who comes back changed due to the various places I wound up at. And then I put my 2 cents in, and yes, change is good.
Can be good. And keeping some things the same can be good too, and preserving what's worth preserving.
Yes, because people rely on that and recognize it later that, oh, this is why things are running along fairly smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know kids who, I've been a teacher and I've seen kids go and come back here, and they see this is a place worth coming back to.
You're right.
And it's kind of reassuring to feel like there's towns like this. You can have a small town that can be lively, and it can still, present the wonderful things about a small town that you really want to keep.
Lively and entertaining.
But now, you grew up in Purdy, so did you go to a one-room school?
I did.
Yeah.
I'm that old.
Well,
it was called the Nottingham School, and I went the first 4 grades, and the main reason I liked it, you got tired of the same kids every year because you knew them and all that, and you knew their parents. So it was all on the up and up. But I wasn't interested in just coloring between the lines in my first couple of grades. That was boring. I was more interested in what the upper classes were talking about. at the front table. And the teacher didn't care for that, but I didn't care. So I learned about hippopotamuses and the moon phases and all these kind of things and everything in between way more earlier than some kids. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't mm-hmm. interested in coloring between the lines or whatever else they made you do.
Well, I don't know. You know, a lot of people don't even know what that one-room school experience was like, but you did have older kids with younger kids.
And we did everything except we weren't allowed into the furnace room. But we fixed, washed, cleaned, rearranged everything without any extra help.
No janitors or
anything. No, no, no.
And did you heat with wood?
No, no. It was an old oil furnace.
Oil furnace.
But that was the rule. Thou shalt not enter the furnace room.
Okay.
Well, us farm kids, ooh, I want to go in there and tinker. No, we were not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
That was the rule. Otherwise, everything else we fixed. We changed the light bulbs, washed the windows, all that kind of stuff. No, I'm not quite that old going back to a wood stove.
But, mm-hmm. Now, did you have the same teacher all along?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell her name after we talk a little bit. It isn't there yet.
There's a comeback.
Yeah.
But did you, and did you walk to school?
Oh, no. The farmers, our dads mostly, and one mother, I think, they drove cars 3 trips. Each day, of course, twice to send you home too. My dad did it for 1 year. We'd bring a carload in, go bring another carload in, and then go get the third carload.
So you were pretty far from school.
We were 2.5 miles.
It was, yeah.
Which is about as far as you could have been or so from any of the country schools in that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been late 50s and early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
A whole different era. Oof. Yeah.
Well, we've seen a lot of things disappear. I know when I came out, my husband's daughter went to a one-room school.
Wow.
And then she went to a two-room school in Bloomingdale for a couple of years.
Yep.
And then those schools closed. So I watched the schools close. Then I watched the cheese factories close.
The cheese factories. When the 7 of them closed that one fateful day, I was the last milk hauler for Bud Cheese. And so I saw that change, and then the people who took it over or bought it from Bud Cheese, AMPI, I lucked out, they gave me actually more patrons. So I actually come out ahead on the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the last mail caller for Bud Cheese.
Mm-hmm. And I loved Bud Cheese.
Yep, yep.
Well, that was the great thing. I mean, each cheese factory kind of had its own kind of cheese.
He did. Mr. Floyd, I can't remember his first name, made a cheese in the round. It was a light brown, almost like a Brimost, but denser. And I carried a lot of that stuff to the patrons. I carry the cheese and the paychecks.
Right. So in that era, the farmers were having their milk hauled to the cheese factory.
Yep.
And then cheese was made, and then the farmers got it back, or what? How did it work?
The cheese that Floyd made was just his own. Now, who he sold his cheese to, I don't know. And that was, mm-hmm. I wasn't concerned.
But it was really a big change in the whole dairy picture.
Yes.
That milk would get picked up and sent, to Chicago or something? Fluid
when
milk.
I started, when the changeover occurred, most of my patrons were still around the Bud area. But I had to take it down to Coon Valley. They had what was called a relay station. They had 2 huge tanks down there. And we'd fill them up with our little trucks, and then once a day, a big tanker would come through. And where that went, I haven't a clue.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of us remember the dairy too, which was in Viroqua.
Oh, that was great.
And yeah. That was made. The ice cream was made from local milk.
Yes, yes. When that closed, that was quite a change. And I saw that as it changed, because it was a fine institution and unique also. And it disappeared. People noticed it. I was more interested in how the people were noticing it after the shock of it disappearing, and paid attention to how they were reacting to it. There was a lot of gnashing of teeth and, oh well, and everything in between.
So what would you say is basically what was happening? Sort of a, I don't know, homogenizing of milk from everybody and mixed all together and sent back to what
was happening.
The big deal was,
in that era, milk was all of a sudden, they knew they could get more value out of it. Everything from your basic gallons of milk on a shelf, the homogenization, of course, that was already being done, but that process was refined. But they didn't throw anything away, especially the whey. That went into everything from candy bars to children's formula. Well, that was all new. And there was a huge demand for milk. So they basically paid off the little creameries around here so they could gather the milk. Farmers, of course, added a few cows because the price boosted a little bit artificially. Wasn't really market-based yet.
Oh.
And so a new era began in the business of taking the milk and getting more added value out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Took me a while to figure that out.
But the farmers didn't end up coming out
but
well
the farmer,
at the end.
The farmers seldom saw any of this because it wasn't any of their business, basically. And then the superstores started to come in, like the Wally Worlds and all that. And I'm trying to think of the word, the refined products that were made from it, the candy bars and all these extra added things, made money.
Mm-hmm.
All profit-molded.
Right.
Motive-ed.
And then the other thing that disappeared were the little country stores, little corner stores all over Viroqua, and the country stores in every corner, you know.
I know who has the original Bud store sign. I ain't telling. I don't, but I know who does.
Well, I'm talking with Randall Olson, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about the change in Viroqua and vicinity, because he was a child who grew up here, went to school here, and then went away. Yes, he's kept his childlike manner. He went away for a while and came back and saw a lot of changes. And I just wanted to pursue that a little bit.
Yeah.
Randall is somebody who kept on learning all his life. Sounds like he was, and maybe that's something that...
If you don't learn something new every day and recognize it, you aren't doing things right. And... I think that's true for everybody, a 3-year-old, a 93-year-old. There was an old celloist, and I think it was Rostropovich, who someone came into his practice room, and of course he's practicing, 93. And, yep, I see improvement. oft-quoted item in the classical music world. But that one kind of stuck with me. Here you got a guy who's the world's renowned celloist back in the 80s and the 70s, Mstislav Rostropovich. He was so good. And still improving. I see improvement.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So hang in there, kids.
So I really have Randall here to talk about garlic. And you may recognize his voice because he's at the farmer's market. And I would say he's just kind of a philosopher of life. And it's really fun to hang around him at the farmer's market here in Viroqua. And he knows an awful lot about garlic. I'm wondering, did they grow garlic around here when you were a kid? Or is this something you got interested in? And Because I just don't remember that being a crop for anybody.
You're the first one to bring that one up. And no, I don't recall anyone. It was onions.
Uh-huh.
Just onions. A few leeks. Some places had leeks. But I don't know how garlic got started here.
Maybe you're the Johnny Appleseed of the garlic
apparently
world. Well, how did you get interested in garlic?
Marcia Halligan?
Oh, yes.
Was at the farmer's market when we started, and I got four varieties from her. In fact, I still have her farm's namesake garlic, Chrysalis Chinese Purple. And from that four varieties, I bumped it up to 100 varieties over the years. And I'm back down to 76 now, getting older and all that. No, what happened was 20 or so of the varieties over the years I noticed were not working due to various reasons. My ineptitude all the way to the climate, this area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, garlic is a dirt-sensitive plant. It does what it does where it is. Okay. And that's just how it grows. If it's in poor ground, it's going to do poorly. I always ask when I sell garlic for planting, especially if they get several varieties, and then they report back next year why some of the varieties didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I tell them. You're taking the garlic that's been in my dirt and putting it in your dirt, and things are different. Garlic is a huge, quick responder. And it'll slap you sideways to Sunday or praise you to God's glory. Everything in between. But garlic does what it does.
Well, what do you call a garlic failure? What can go wrong with it?
Let's say it's very dry for a month and a half before harvest. No rain. The garlic bulb is the wettest thing in that top 6 inches of the dirt. And there's one item in the dirt that likes moisture, and that's fungi. It'll crawl into the bulbs. And you can think that, oh, everything is hunky-dorky. Well, then halfway through the curing process, you notice the bulbs are getting pulpy, punky. Well, there's a fungus that likes to move in there, but you don't really notice it when you harvest it because it's kind of a white fungus. Now, I can't remember the name of it. And
but the fungus really develops because there's not enough rain.
Yep.
Wow.
Like I said, the bulb is the...
Who would have
thought that? Yep, bulb is the wettest thing in that top 6 inches. That happened 2 years ago, I think. We were... In our particular location on Nottingham Ridge, we were in a mini drought. That is, all the rains went north and south, bypassed us. And I noticed later on, after I got the garlic in the shed and started the processing for sale and all that, I had to toss a lot of bulbs.
Because I don't
consider them fit to sell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If it ain't fit, it's not going over my table.
Okay.
Because I don't want people to take home bad garlic.
Okay, so you sell garlic for people to eat.
Yep.
Just and then you sell garlic for people to save and plant.
It's the same.
Yeah, it's the same garlic.
It's the same garlic.
Same garlic.
Yeah.
So let's go back to, you know, the life cycle of a garlic bulb.
Okay, let's start you in the fall when you've got your cloves. We'll bring it around in how we got there as we go here. You got your cloves, you got your ground all worked up, fertilized, hopefully a couple weeks ago or more. You don't like to put a garlic cloves right into a freshly manured field. A little nitrogen strong, and it can weaken the cloves. And you get them in there. However you do it, you can plant garlic until the ground is so frozen that you can't get in. One year it snowed. I think it was the second week of November. I was a little slow that year. working full-time and everything at the gas company. And it snowed the night before I was just going to finish. So I get out there with my tiller. I chew it up. The dirt was white. My fingers froze, and it grew just as well as anything else.
Wow.
So you can plant until you can't get into the ground.
Oh, amazing, because yeah. I thought there was a time limit. No. But when's the ideal time to put our garlic in? In October?
No sooner than the middle of October. If you plant too early, there's a good chance you will get the growth emerging above the surface of the ground. And then when it gets really cold, well, that's just going to burn off. You've already consumed now some of the cloves storage for the continuing of the plant's cycle through the winter. And that's basically a vernalization process after the roots are set down.
So you really don't want to see garlic emerging?
No.
After you plant it. I did that one year.
Ideally, it'd be neat to go all the way from the moment you put the clove in the ground till the middle of March, not see any emerging green.
Okay.
However, that's rare. And everybody had toasted leaf tips this year because we had a thaw in, I think it was February. And the garlic senses that. Oh, it's spring. Right. So it starts to grow. Well, then you get a half inch to an inch of green tips. And they can freeze. Mulching can prevent that.
Because I did mulch with straw, and I think that probably protected
mulching
it.
Mulching can keep the February freeze from really messing with your garlic. However, and this year we had a kind of a cold spell in April, and people really had some toasted leaves, 2 or 3 inches.
So that just weakens the development of the garlic after that.
Mm-hmm. But garlic is a hardy soul. It originated on the planet from the Siberian area all the way down to the Mediterranean, known as the Garlic Crescent. And so it's used to some very dry, cold conditions north and wet, warmer conditions south. And all these varieties have the characteristics that continue to include the changes that happens when they go into different dirts. That's how I say it. After the garlic, then, after you get by April, you're good. Because then it comes up, and basically I leave it alone. It's too far away, and I've got 13,000 plus. There's no way I could do any justice in watering it. It would just be pathetic. So basically, I'd leave it alone.
Now, is it mulched at all?
I mulch every bit of it.
You mulch?
Including the shallots, as a side note, because I plant them also in the fall.
Okay.
And the elephant garlic, which, it's not a true garlic, but people love it because it shares some flavor characteristics of leeks and garlic. But I've got a certain crowd that wants the elephant garlic. I already got an order for 5 pounds of it, so okay. Cooks like it because it isn't so strong, and they can do the lighter dishes with it. Anyway, in June, the garlic is growing. It's getting tall. And third week of June or so, on the hardnecks, the scapes come up. The flowering stalk of the garlic plant, the softnecks do not produce that. Almost, not quite. I'll explain.
You just can't generalize completely.
No. The hardnecks, then, they produce the scapes, which are quite consumable. You top them right when they start to curl. Some varieties in the Racambole variety category, they're smaller, more colorful, more flavorful bulbs. they'll actually do a double curl, like a pig's tail, twice. And you knock them off, and you can use them as green onions, store them just like a green onion, chop them up, put them in baggies, toss them in the freezer, and all that kind of stuff. And cook with them. A couple of people I learned this year, even put them on the grill. Why not? Mm-hmm. It's a vegetable. It can be grilled.
So, but do you keep the top on or do you take that off?
It's more better to take it off, mm-hmm. because it does improve the plant's ability to feed now its energies to the bulb.
Mm. Yeah, I just meant the little top at the end of the scape.
The
little
top,
seed head.
The seed head is called the spathe.
Spathe.
S-P-E-A-T-H, something like that. And therein contained in that seed head is the garlic's ability to flower, which is the third way you can propagate garlic, other than cloves and the bulbils, which are the small, little, usually round cloves that occur in the soft necks when they bolt. And I even got one plant, Island Star, I think it's called. It's a soft neck that instead of the bulbils that come up on a stressed soft neck garlic, the bulbils went all the way to the end like a scape on a soft neck. I'm saving that one for demonstration tomorrow at the market. So if you want to see...
And can you plant those then?
Yes. However, those small bulbs, the bulbils, will probably take 2 or 3 years to develop into a full-sized bulb. The first year you're going to get a round, which is just what it is. It's round. It's a single clove, unvernalized, unsplit, uncloved piece of garlic. And you put them right back in that same year, and then you should get some smaller bulbs, year two. Then you take the biggest of those bulbs, biggest cloves, and you plant them. Then by your third year, you should have then normal-sized bulbs for that variety.
Mm-hmm.
Not every variety works that way. And as I like to say, and then it gets weird. I use that phrase a lot because the garlic can go in so many directions. Like I said, this is the first one I've seen for quite a while, a soft neck, stressed, due to we've had some pretty hot days there and lack of sunlight and more rain than we needed all at once after not having it for a month. All these weather factors. I got one now that it's a soft neck that instead of the bulbils halfway up the stem, and there'll be a hard neck. It actually went all the way up and created a scape. I have no idea why. I'll worry about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Find somebody smarter than me to figure that one out. But that's a rarity. And so that's how the soft necks can propagate, other than the mother bulb's cloves.
Okay.
You can send up when stressed. The mother bulb says, ooh.
Better have some babies.
Better have some backup.
Yeah.
Instead of just me, the cloves in the ground. Mm-hmm. So it'll bolt.
So, except for the taking off the scapes of the hard neck garlic, you really raise soft neck and garlic and hard neck the same way?
Yep.
Okay.
They're just all in the same row.
Yeah. You just
they can't intermingle and get seriously crazy. You wonder sometime, but and I do try to alternate it. A hard neck with a soft neck and a hard neck.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're busy planting, I just want to get done and get it.
Since you're just growing, you don't even call it a root. It's not a root. It's a bulb. What is it?
It's a bulb with roots.
It's a bulb with roots.
Yeah.
But you're not working with pollinating, so they're not going to cross over.
You can.
So
but you've got to have basically indoor perfect conditions. And there's a group of people who take fully developed seed heads, spathes, let them flower out, go to seed. The seeds are smaller than radish seeds, smaller than mustard seeds. And if you can think of anything smaller, they're smaller than that. And you got to take them out individually with a tweezer. Mm-hmm. And at that point, yes, you could have two different varieties of garlic in a room. And if you left them on the stalks, they open up and all that. They could cross-pollinate.
Mm-hmm.
With the flowering and all
right.
that.
Right. But just growing a bulb in the ground, you're not even involved in the flower at all.
And the reason they do this is they're looking for true garlic, biologically. That's a little beyond me.
Okay.
I'll work on that PhD later. Right now, my level of a PhD is piled higher and deeper, and it works for
garlic.
Does it?
I wondered.
Garlic is full of stories, so that's where the PhD in lower letters works. And in capital letters, you try to learn as much as possible about it.
Right.
But you don't want to get too scientific.
Well, it seems to me my garlic was planted deeper this year, and it is bigger.
Sometimes.
And could that, is that?
My cloves are usually they're usually down 4 inches, the top of the clove. And I tell people the minimum depth you want for the clove's depth when you plant is 2 inches below the surface of the dirt of the top of the clove. And that covers any size clove. There's some clove. The silver skins are a soft neck, very hardy, but their cloves are usually small, and so those cloves are only like a half inch long. But the reason it's a good garlic because it tastes good, stores forever. And so there's a good for that, and so I try to develop these common techniques, tasks, whatever, to tell people when they plant that are common. There to go. Enough that it's true in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, yeah, it gets weird.
Mm-hmm. And you can see why you'd really want to buy garlic that's grown in our region. So
local garlic is the huge catchphrase, because it is true. Anybody who buys garlic and plants it within a 40 mile or so, or even more, like 100 mile type of radius, is better assured. You can't take a bunch of hardnecks down to Louisiana. They won't work.
So hardnecks are more suited to a northern climate?
The northerner, the better, all the way up to the upper
in
northern Canada.
Mm-hmm. So do softnecks taste the same? I mean, of course, there's a lot of variety in every type of garlic, right?
The aforementioned the silver skins can be quite hot, and their flavor is strong. But otherwise, they work in a dish just as well as some of the big hardnecks. Most of them called porcelains, the ones you would put on the grill, because grilled garlic is great.
I've never done it.
It's like peanut butter, but 1,000 times better.
Oh my God!
And that's why a lot of the big garlics, porcelains, big white cloves, hot, raw, they'll actually burn your tongue. Which is great, wakes you up a little bit. They're great on the grill because. They produce a lot of yummy goodness.
Oh, gosh.
It's real. We'll talk about other grilling in just a bit. Continuing on with the cycle, they've been in the ground. You've scaped. When to dig? I'd be doing it right now, except it's the day before market, and I tried to limit my energies. Sky ain't looking any better as I look out the radio station's... Oh. Street window here, It's a wet day today. Oh, yeah, you can go up there and pull the garlic.
What a messy
wet.
Job
oh, yeah.
to dig it out. Oh, the dirt is just clinging to the
Now, yesterday the I dug what's called Spanish Roja, Spanish Red. And, no, I can't get the R's to roll with my tongue. I'm Norwegian, okay? It don't work. But once in a while at the market, I'll get a person who knows Spanish. And they'll go, Spanish
Roja. Oh.
And it sounds so cool, okay. And I'll say, say that again. Because I can't. Because that's a garlic that has to be harvested early. Because it breaks down at the root ends. And
Yeah, so I was going to say, what are the problems if you don't harvest it in time?
Which is common for me because it takes me a month and a half or even 2 months of time to harvest it all. So I try to leave some of the big porcelains to the end because I know they can take it. But I have to make sure I get the early ones. Right now I'm doing the Spanish Roja. I'll be doing the Japanese Asiatic. These are hardnecks, but they're a softer type of hardneck. I can't think of the character. They're not a turban, but one of the others. They send up scapes, but they aren't real hard. But they have to be harvested earlier because if we get the rain like we're getting now, they'll rot faster in the ground. Especially if your ground tends to be a little more on the damp side anyway. It's always good to plant on a slope.
So one of the mistakes I made was to wait too long, and it was all the garlic cloves were already separating from each other, and that was really a nuisance. And
that's not good. It won't store.
No.
All you can do then is hope no fungus got in there, or these little bugs, little round ones and little long ones. No, I can't remember what they are. And because they see the cloves softening up, and they're fun to eat, in their view. And so you want to try to avoid that. It's actually better to harvest early, if in doubt, than wait too long. And the key you look for is at least leaf number 2 is fully brown. Then you can harvest. That's the same for softnecks and hardnecks.
Okay.
Rednecks, that's another question. Just seeing if you're paying attention. Jim?
All right. Huh?
I haven't used that one for a long time. Thank you. And then, so right now it is the time to harvest because everybody's garlic has the second leaf on the bottom is toasted. And the third leaf is starting. You can be confused now because the third leaf may have gotten quite a bit of that crispness from the cool weather in April. So you think the third leaf is done. It's not. It's still green, but it's shorter, and so it's going to have a longer brown tip on it. But anyway, that's getting too finely tuned. Dig now, basically.
Now, how do you dig? I mean, you've got thousands of garlic bulbs. I mean, you're not doing this with a fork.
Yep.
You are.
Yep. I have made an old quack digger for my uncle, and I took off all the tines, but two of them, and I put an angle iron connecting the two and sharpened one edge on it. But I can't really start to use that, and I haven't tried it yet. I built it in the wintertime. It's a garlic lifter, they call them.
Okay.
And I've seen a couple of the videos, and I'm going to try it probably after this week, because I can only get in the field one way. And then once I start, I want to do the whole roll. My rolls are 100 foot plus long, usually containing 5 to 7 varieties. But if that works, if I can go and undercut, but I got to get it down 6 inches minimum.
Yeah, you don't want to cut right through your bulb.
Bulbs, yeah.
Oh.
And if that works, I will there will be heaven opening up for angels praising, whatever. It'll be really cool. Anyway, and if it doesn't work, which, okay, I'm used to that. I invent things, and, well, that I blew that. Tear it up and start over again. Like in the videos, they use real heavy steel and everything. They got a 50-horse tractor, and but mine's a little smaller scale. I built it mainly to help to dig and loosen the dirt under potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it'll work. But right now, since I'm only taking out selected varieties, would I have enough sense to plant all of the early varieties all at the same time? Of course not.
Oh.
That's why I grow garlic year after year, because you don't learn that.
Once you've dug them.
Okay.
Okay, you've got this dirt, these dirt clumps.
All I do is...
what do you do?
Is right as I pull, after I loosen them up with a fork, then I pull them up, I knock the dirt off the roots, pile them up, put them in a black tray. Oh, nope. Right after I pile them up, I chop off about the top third, because that's mostly all brown anyway. Less weight to haul. Okay. And then I put them in a black crate, make sure my stick is in, make sure I don't lose track of that variety. When I haul it to the shed, then I just put them on poles, and they dry.
So you dry them with all the dirt on them?
Usually the dirt is minimal. On the bulb itself, what I do, if they're big, 2-inch and bigger bulbs, I take my thumb, I twirl the bulb in my hand as I'm knocking the dirt off the roots, and I kind of peel off that outer weak skin. And that usually contains the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
That's good enough.
Okay, then you just store them. Now, told me I made a mistake. I dug my garlic and I laid it out to dry, just like onions.
Yes,
and don't do that.
Garlic will cook when you leave it out in the sun, and it weakens its ability for storage.
Okay. Well, so I learned something today. Yay.
Yay.
Okay.
It gets pulpy. Okay. And if you leave it out there a couple of days, it's going to be punky. Yeah. Pulpy and punky are scientific terms in garlic biz. And you don't want that if you can anyway help it. Okay.
So you've cut off part of the stalks. You cut off part.
Yeah, the top, because that actually, I think, facilitates the water getting out of the plant.
Okay.
And I store them bulb down, because they're in crates. Of course, there's great debate as to hanging them upside down, that is, the bulb on top, and the leaves down. I haven't seen any difference.
Okay.
As long as your storage area is cool, dark, and dry.
Cool, dark, and dry.
Which is the basic thing for storing just about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then when I get ready to process, I grab bulbs, and I cut them so the stems are an inch, cut off the roots. I brush the roots. Now they're all dry now. And then I make them pretty, because I consider mine a gourmet garlic. Appearance is important, because if it looks good, it probably is good. And, let me put in a little item here. A friend of mine bought some garlic from an unreliable source, and he didn't have the sense to catch. He was buying last year's garlic. They unloaded some last year's garlic on him. He showed me the bulb. He stopped by last week. He showed me the bulb. I said, "Harry, this is last year's garlic." I could see the little black mold behind the cloves without even picking up the bulb. The bulb weighed nothing. It was almost like negative weight. And I stuck my nose in it.
Oh, no. Yep. Oh, yeah. You can't save your garlic over another year.
Actually, my garlic is good through June. From last year, I still got a couple of bulbs on the table.
So when you go to store it, you know, long term.
Yep.
Where do you want it? Can cool. you put it in your basement? Is that
cool, dark, and dry?
Cool, dark, and dry.
But it can't be refrigerator cool. That's too cool.
That's too cool. That's what I've been doing.
Your glasses are too dark. You're too cool. Okay. Yep. It might work.
Just to keep it from changing temperature as a constant temperature.
Good point. Yes, I should mention that temperature fluctuation in storage is not good unless you're making black garlic. Well, that's another item.
That's another whole topic.
Which yeah. involves the changing of humidity and temperature during the 9-day process. So you come up with that wonderful, wonderful stuff of black garlic. More about that later.
Okay.
And then after you decide what garlic you want to keep to plant, it's not the bulb size, it's the clove size.
Right.
Once in a while, I'll get a bunch of bulbs that aren't really bulbs. They're just two huge cloves on a stem.
And those are good to plant.
You always yeah. get good plants off those because I made sure one year to check that. I plant them at the end. Let's say I've got 200 okay. plants of music, and I'll have a half a dozen of these two clove bulbs. Well, I'll take those cloves, and they're usually huge. I put them on the end, and they're great. So clove size for planting mm-hmm. is the key.
You know, just to share a little experience of my own, one year I didn't get around to planting my garlic.
Oh.
And I was really sick about it. And I thought, I've grown this garlic, same garlic, you know, for 50 years since I've been here.
What kind?
So I don't know. Okay. I got to take it to you. You got to tell me what it is.
I want to see it.
It's beautiful garlic, and it produces very well, and it's not too hot. It's strong, and I really love it. And I didn't get it planted. And I thought, I've lost my strain. I was just sick about it.
What'd you do?
I planted as early as I could in the spring, and I got a great crop. I got full bulbs.
That's rare. You done good.
And I saved it.
Yep.
And I'll never let that happen again.
So basically, you harvested that spring-planted garlic. You harvested it, and you put some of it right back in the ground the next day, basically.
I did. Yep. I did.
Yep. It can be done, and you are proof of that.
But that is really scary, and I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
No, planting in the spring, usually you don't get quite as large. But, as you said, to help retain the strain, you done good on it.
Mm-hmm.
Bravo.
Boy.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the life cycle.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've made me realize that
the garlic.
I've got my own garlic, and I should really treasure that, and I should keep
yes.
it going. And
one
I
of my varieties is called Westby Wonder. Okay, when you sell garlic, you got to have a shtick, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from Westby, from a guy. I stumbled into his living room to ask him a question about doing a gas line, a locate on his property. And, okay... And I noticed a pile of garlic under his dining room table. Huge pile. He just, cool, dark, and dry, close enough. And it wasn't the cleanest place, but they don't matter. And I said, what you got here? Oh, it's garlic my grandpa grew for 40 years in this area, just north of here. I want some. So I talked him out of a half a dozen. It's a soft neck, and it's awesome. Because it's been in this area for 40 years. Now it's pushing 50 years. Because I think I've had it for 10 years now. And so, yeah, the locally grown thing really pays off. It doesn't come out perfect and nice every year. For two reasons. Weather. And where I grow my garlic, there's 11 patches. About each patch the size of 3 or 4 large buildings. A lot of ground, and it's about a 2-acre chunk, and the dirts are different in the different areas. So I've got a garlic that's grown in sandy gravel right next to the road kind of dirt. When it's dry, you can't even throw a fork in it. Forget it. It's a pain. to a very rich loam and better. So my garlic gets changed with sweet corn, potatoes, onions, and squash. Everything is rotated. That's the word I wanted, which helps also. Try not to plant the garlic in the same place.
Okay.
And full sun. Two big items. I'm going to get them in there. You'll get better garlic. I don't care if it's 10 bulbs or 10,000. Move things around.
Yeah. So you're saying once you've dug the garlic and you have it drying, you kind of ended that cycle.
That cycle is done. And like in your special case, with the spring planted garlic, you're kind of doing the same thing. You got lucky.
I did. I could have just lost it forever.
Because it was...
It's too late. I mean, that's pretty late for your garlic clove to make it, your bulb, to make it through the whole winter and still be...
And the fact that you got a vernalization action happened, it got just cool enough for that to happen. I learned more about that in Pakistan. There's a huge garlic growing resurgence. And, of course, it's hot over there. They have to refrigerate their garlic, seed garlic, to cool it down to make it clove. Cold weather required.
Oh.
And they're getting away with it, but they've got their own kind of strains. That's why I'm really now interested in your garlic, because so you bring some by, because I have people bring by garlic so I can see. In fact, I got another one called Dubuque Dandy. Okay, it's marketing 101. There we go. And but this lady from Dubuque, Iowa, brought a bag of garlic, and it's gorgeous porcelain hardneck. But it's not Armenian. It's not any of these Russian ones that I have. It's different. So I raised it for 3 years, then I can put my name on it. It's beautiful garlic. And it's kind of a trend watcher for me, because it seems to come by good every year. Never a bad season for that particular kind of garlic.
Uh-huh.
So I treasure that one.
Right. Right.
I even got one called the Pride of Purdy. Hey.
Oh.
Which is ultimately derived from a variety called Siberian. Siberian's variety is, it's centuries old. It's been around forever. And they got the big garlic seed farms in this country understood that this is a good, separate, distinct variety for northern climates.
Mm.
And the Pride of Purdy came out of that in a strange way. More about that later. Anyway, so I come up with these different strains on my own.
So can you look at people's garlic that they bring in and say, oh, this is from this particular strain?
The 7 to 9 categories of garlic depends on who you're talking to. And I can get you in the right category. If it's Creole, which is a southern, it's probably not going to produce well here. But occasionally you luck off. We have a hot summer. Comes too great. The porcelains are easy to identify. Big, white, hot, hard necks. The silver skins, just the opposite. Very small. They're a soft neck. And cloves are smaller. And they'll have 3 circles of cloves. And then there's the recombales, the standard purple stripe, the something else purple stripe, turbans, artichokes, and a couple others. And so, yeah, I can get you in the right direction.
Oh, that's really fascinating.
And if you let me have a bulb and I can eat it, I might be able to get closer.
And then we could name it. I am at the point where I could name my garlic, couldn't I?
And if your garlic is something cool that I can pass on to other people,
No.
We'll come up with something, which is pretty much my motto for. It's raining cats and dogs right now. We'll come up with, we'll figure out something.
Well, we're just about out of time. Do we just want to cap it off with some
I've learned
wisdom?
Recently about the garlic. It runs things. I'm just a facilitator. It rewards me if I do things half right or better. Or it smites my sorry butt to Sunday, way into the future, if I really mess up and do something wrong, which I tend to avoid.
Aww.
Yeah, okay. But garlic is life itself, because minimal attendance to its needs, but you do it kind of halfway right, and things work out okay.
Yeah, it really gives back to you.
That's another way of putting it, yeah. But I've just kind of slowly come to that realization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I just have really enjoyed talking with you, Randall, and it seems like, I mean, I interviewed you many years ago, and
that's been a while.
I still learned so much today, and there was more to talk about garlic and some of the basics, but you've learned over the years, and you have a lot of wisdom to share. So you can look for Randall at the Viroqua's Farmers Market on Saturdays and have a nice talk.
Yeah. Thank you much for having me on the dirt here, because I like the word dirt.
Yeah, I do too. Dirt radio from the ground up. And so that's it for Who's in the Kitchen. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're on at noon every Saturday at 91.9 FM, coming from Viroqua and streaming live on the internet. I was talking with Randall Olson. He's a local guy who's raised garlic for a long, long time, around 50 years. And
20 years garlic.
Oh, 20 years of garlic. Oh, yeah, you're just 50 years old now, right?
I'm just 50.
So, yeah, okay.
I like that.
Thanks so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure. And see you next week.